begins actually where Brother Doug began, and that is in Hebrews chapter 12. Will you look with me over there, please? Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews 12 in verse 2. Keep fixing your eyes upon Jesus, the Hebrew writer exhorts, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is now sat down at the throne of the majesty on high. And then in verse 3, consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you may not grow weary and lose heart. For the next couple of weeks, we're going to do just as the Hebrew writer urges us to do, and that is fix our attention upon Jesus Christ. And as we fix our attention upon Jesus Christ, we will do it for the same reason that the Hebrew writer urges us to do it, and that is so that we may not grow weary and not lose heart in our service to the Lord. As Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1 points out, this is an endurance race. This is not a sprint. This is an endurance race. And if we're going to persevere and we're going to endure all the way to the end, we need to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus through the good and the bad, the sunshine and the sorrows of life, through the storms of life. Keep looking at Jesus. It's only when you take your eyes off Jesus that you start sinking down into the murky waters of this world. And so keep our eyes fixed on Jesus. The Hebrew writer urges us to do this in three different specific ways. He says, remember his suffering on the cross. He endured the cross. Remember how he despised the shame of the cross. And he says, remember why he did this. Jesus did this for the joy set before him. To be with the Father in glory, as he always had been in glory, he will be in glory once again, John 17, 5. And to bring many sons and daughters to glory with him. That's a great part of the joy that was set before him. Thinking of our salvation here in 2019 and 20 and beyond, thinking of the salvation of many souls that will share that glory with him. And so as we fix our eyes upon Jesus this morning, let's focus our attention first of all upon the literal trials of Jesus on his way to the cross. The literal trials. Let's begin now in Matthew chapter 26, looking at the trials of Jesus on the way to the cross. Matthew's account, chapter 26. Jesus and the disciples are in an upper room somewhere in Jerusalem observing the Passover. During this meal, at some point, Jesus reveals the betrayer. In Matthew chapter 26, verse 20, when evening had come, he was reclining at table with the 12 disciples. As they were eating, he said, truly I say to you, one of you will betray me. Being deeply grieved, they each began to say, surely it is not I, Lord. The Jewish leaders needed someone. They needed a person to betray Jesus so that they could arrest him in private and not in public, lest they incur a riot among the people, because the common people loved Jesus. Same chapter, Matthew 26, verse 3. The chief priest and the elders of the people were gathered together in the court of the high priest named Caiaphas, and they plotted together to seize Jesus by stealth and kill him. But they were saying, not during the festival, lest a riot occur among the people. Driven by greed, Judas approaches the high priest, the chief priest, and he offers to betray Jesus. Verse 14. Then one of the 12, named Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priest and said, "What are you willing to give me to deliver him up to you?" They weighed out 30 pieces of silver. And from then on, he began looking for a good opportunity to betray Jesus. That opportunity would come in a garden. Verse 36. Then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee and began to be grieved and distressed. And then he said to them, "My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here, keep watch with me." He went a little beyond them and fell on his face and he prayed, saying, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not as I will, but as thou wilt." Verse 45. He came to the disciples and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and taking your rest? Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Arise, let us be going. Behold, the one who betrays me is at hand." And while he was still speaking, behold, Judas, one of the 12, came up, accompanied by a great multitude with swords and clubs from the chief priests and the elders of the people. And so here in a garden where there should be love and fellowship, man would betray God on two occasions. In Genesis chapter 3 and here in Matthew chapter 26. Jesus rebukes the mob for their ridiculous show of force and for their cowardly behavior. In verse 55, Jesus said to the multitudes, "Have you come out with swords and clubs to arrest me as though I were a robber? Every day I used to sit in the temple teaching and you did not seize me. But all of this has taken place that the scriptures of the prophets may be fulfilled." Then all the disciples left him and fled. You'll notice that no charges were brought against Jesus. This was more of an abduction than an arrest. And just as Jesus had foretold, all his disciples failed to stay with Jesus. They did not stand with Jesus. They all deserted Jesus. Some of them stood at a distance, but they all deserted Jesus. John's account in chapter 18, tells us that Jesus was first of all taken from here to Annas, the former high priest. John 18, verse 12. So the Roman cohort and the commander and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. And led him to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. Annas was the former high priest. He retained the title and still held a tremendous influence over the Jewish people. Verse 19, he questions Jesus in a private hearing. The high priest therefore questioned Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching. Jesus answered him, "I've spoken openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in the temple where all the Jews come together. I've spoken nothing in secret. Why do you question me? Question those who've heard what I have spoken to them. Behold, they know what I said." And when he said this, one of the officers standing by gave Jesus a blow, saying, "Is that the way you answer the high priest?" And Jesus answered him, "If I've spoken wrongly, then bear witness of the wrong. But if rightly, why do you strike me?" Annas therefore sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Annas hopes to expedite this whole situation by finding some kind of incriminating evidence against Jesus. Jesus turns the table and puts Annas on trial. And he challenges Annas to stop this entire charade. He said, "If you're a judge, then at least be a righteous judge. Look at the facts. Investigate. Research what's available. talk to the people I talk to on a daily basis regularly. I said these things in public. If you really want the truth, you'll learn the truth. But there was no investigation of truth concerning Jesus and his trial. This was the most unjust set of trials ever been held in a human court. And no one was more innocent than Jesus. Annas sends Jesus to his son-in-law, Caiaphas, who is acting high priest. Let's go back to Matthew chapter 26, please. Matthew 26. We'll pick up the reading at verse 57. Matthew 26 and verse 57, please. Those who had seized Jesus led him away to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and elders were gathered together. Peter also followed him at a distance as far as the courtyard of the high priest and entered in and sat down with the officers to see the outcome. Now the chief priest and the whole council kept trying to obtain false testimony against Jesus in order that they might put him to death. In essence, the court had become a corrupt prosecutor, eager for false witnesses. In verse 60, they didn't find any. Even though many false witnesses came forward, later two came forward, and they said, the man stated, I'm able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days. The testimony of all these men was so worthless that not even these corrupt judges would allow it into these proceedings. It's interesting to me, too, how that when Jesus made the statement, destroy this temple, in 3 days I will raise it up, they initially ask, what do you mean in 3 days you'll raise it up? But then they drop the matter, and there's no questioning of Jesus about how you're going to rebuild that temple in 3 days any further. That seems to be a logical question to me if you're really seeking the truth. How are you going to rebuild a temple that took 46 years to build? But there's no interest in learning the truth on this occasion. All they want is the death of Jesus. Verse 62, the high priest stood up and said to him, do you make no answer? What is it that these men are testifying against you? But Jesus kept silent. As a lamb before its shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. The high priest said to him, I adjure you. In desperation, he says, by the living God, tell us whether you are the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus affirms the truth, knowing the time has now come. Jesus said to him, you've said it yourself. Nevertheless, I tell you, hereafter you shall see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power, coming on the clouds of heaven. I am the Son of God. He testifies, and the next time you see me, it will not be as a voluntary prisoner. It will be as the Lord of glory coming in judgment against you and your nation. Verse 65, then the high priest tore his robe, saying, he is blasphemed. What further need do we have of witnesses? Behold, you've heard the blasphemy. In a theatrical outburst, he tears his robe, which was against the law of Moses, for the high priest to carry out such a scene. Leviticus 21 and verse 10. He said, what do you think? And they said, he's deserving of death. And then they spat in his face and beat him with their fist. And others slapped him and said, prophesy to us, you Christ. Who is the one who hit you? And so very quickly the proceedings degenerate into brutality. And driven by their pride and their hatred, they move on to the next step, and that is to hand him over to Pilate to carry out the execution. Matthew chapter 27, if you will. Matthew 27 and verse 1. Now when morning had come, all the chief priests and the elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. They bound him and led him away and delivered him up to Pilate, the governor. In 63 BC, the Jewish state became subject to the Roman Empire. They could have their judges, they could have court proceedings, they could pass a sentence. Normally, the sentence could be carried out by the Jewish people. But if the sentence was death, then the whole matter had to be given over to the prefect or the governor for consideration. Now, the governor, when that sentence was death, could either accept the sentence, agree with it, he could lessen the sentence, or he could throw it out altogether and say it was unworthy of his attention. He had that prerogative. That's why they hand Jesus over to Pilate, the governor, in that area. And so they hand Jesus over to Pilate, and Pilate, of course, wants to know, what are the charges? Why are you bringing this man to me? In let's go to John chapter 18. Let's go to John's account for that. John chapter 18. John 18. And let's begin at verse 28. They led Jesus, therefore, from Caiaphas into the praetorium. It was early. They themselves did not enter into the praetorium in order that they might not be defiled and not eat the Passover. The hypocrisy of these professional gnat strainers is just staggering. They don't want to be defiled. Verse 29, Pilate, therefore, went out to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? So what's the charge? They answered and said, if this man were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him up to you. Now the Jews know that blasphemy is not a legal offense under Roman law. Pilate won't care about blasphemy. And so Pilate, he's not interested in this case. If you're going to come before me with some kind of nebulous, ambiguous charge of general this or that, he says, I'm not interested. You take care of the matter yourself. And so at that point, Luke's account tells us they level the charge of insurrection. Well, he said he was a king. And when Pilate hears those words that he claimed to be a king, well, that could mean rebellion against Rome. That could mean defiance against Caesar. And so at that point, Pilate becomes interested. Okay, here's something I need to deal with. This could have repercussions on me. And so I need to deal with the matter. He becomes interested at that point. Verse 33, Pilate questions Jesus. Pilate therefore entered again into the praetorium and summoned Jesus and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answered, are you saying this on your own initiative, or did others tell you about me? Pilate said, I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests delivered you up to me. What have you done? Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would be fighting that I might not be delivered up to the Jews. There'd be a rebellion. There would be a riot going on. But my kingdom is not of this realm. Verse 37, Pilate therefore said to him, so you are a king. Jesus answered, you say correctly that I am a king. For this I have been born, and to this I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. Pilate said to him, what is truth? I'd like to have heard that inflection. And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews, and he said, I find no guilt in this man. Now, if there was ever a hostile witness, brothers and sisters, it was Pontius Pilate. If there was ever a man who would be antagonistic toward this defendant, who would be against a Jew who's had the charge of insurrection leveled against him, it would be Pilate. He is a hostile witness. And yet, what does he say about Jesus? He's innocent. A hostile witness in a court of law carries a lot of weight if they speak in favor of the defendant. It can be very valuable testimony. In this case, very valuable. Now, at some point, Pilate learns that Jesus is from Galilee, which is outside his jurisdiction. That's north of Judea. Eager to get rid of the whole case, Pilate sends Jesus to Herod Antipas, who has rulership over Galilee. Pick up the reading with me in Luke 23, please. Luke 23. Luke 23, let's begin at verse 7. And when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, that's Herod Antipas, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was in Jerusalem at that time. Now Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he had been wanting to see him for a long time, because he had been hearing about him and was hoping to see some sign performed by him. He questioned him at some length, but he answered him nothing. Again, as a lamb before its shearers is silent. And the chief priests and the scribes were standing there accusing him vehemently. Herod, with his soldiers, after treating him with great contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate. Knowing Herod's evil motives, Jesus would say nothing to Pilate or to Herod. But when the soldiers see that Herod is against him, then they themselves jump on board and they begin treating Jesus very cruelly. Just in a merciless manner, mocking him with this scarlet robe. Nonetheless, Herod also finds no guilt in Jesus. Now this is the second hostile witness. Someone who would be antagonistic against the defendant. Someone who would not willingly, knowingly, purposefully speak in favor of his cause, yet says, this man's innocent. And so Herod Antipas sends Jesus back to Pilate. And look with me now at verse 13. Luke 23, 13. Pilate summoned the chief priests and the rulers and the people, and he said, you brought this man to me as one who incites the people to rebellion. And behold, having examined him before you, I find no guilt in this man regarding the charges which you've made against him. No, nor has Herod, for he sent him back to us. And behold, nothing deserving of death has been done by this man. Now that's three times Pilate has said, this man is innocent. And Pilate is a hardened politician. He has sent many a man to execution. He has no problem doing that, especially a Jew. The relationship between the Jews and Pilate was a bitter enmity, beginning with his rule in 26 AD all the way to the end in 36 AD. It was a bitter enmity. Pilate would have no problem handing over a Jew to execution if he thought there was any inkling of guilt. You need to understand that. But Pilate has a real problem with this situation, that is, giving over Jesus to be crucified. He really has a hard time with this because he was innocent. And Pilate could see the whole reason this was going on is because of the envy and the hatred of the Jews toward Jesus. And that's it. They were envious of his influence. In John 19, Pilate tries to dissuade the Jews. He tries to dissuade the Jews further. In John 19, in verse 1, Pilate, therefore, took Jesus and scourged him. John 19, verse 2. And the soldiers wove a crown of thorns and put it on his head, arrayed him in a purple robe, and they began to come up to him and say, Hail, King of the Jews, and give him blows in the face. And Pilate came out again, and he said to them, Behold, I am bringing him out to you, that you may know I find no guilt in him. Jesus therefore came out, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate said, Behold the man! Many people died under the scourge. The Jews would give 39 lashes and no more, lest they violate the law. The Romans didn't have such a law. many a man died under the scourge. The Romans would sometimes beat a man within 1 inch of his death. Jesus has been up all night. He's gone through numerous trials, mockery, insults, ridicule, blows on the face, spittle, a crown of thorns, blood just oozing down over his face, his back and sides lacerated, open wounds. You could see in many cases the inside of a man's organs. Pilate hopes that presenting him to the people at this point in such a bloody, lacerated, unrecognizable condition, there will be compassion. Surely there's compassion among you people for one of your own countrymen. Behold the man. And their answer was, crucify, crucify. There would be no compassion for Jesus, the Son of God and Savior of mankind, on that day. Pilate cowardly hands Jesus over to the executioners to be crucified. Many people say that Jesus didn't have a trial. He didn't have a trial before the crucifixion, but as we have seen, he had five. He had a trial before